Well, Richard's got a great idea. How about reconsidering our defence relationship with the United States, particularly on the issue of those joint military bases like Pine Gap, Northwest Cape, Geraldton. In recent times, any criticism of the US-Australian alliance came from the usual suspects, often on the fringe of Australian politics. I consider myself to be one of them. But rethinking the role of the bases has become almost mainstream. You might remember my chat with Malcolm Fraser last year when he spoke of how he thought the US-Australia Defence Alliance needed to change. His arguments may not have been welcomed in the Australian military-industrial complex, but they were no longer that easy to dismiss as being totally unrealistic. So what about the bases? Have they outlived the usefulness to Australia? Richard, as I said, Senior Research Associate at the Nautilus Institute and Professor of International Relations at the University of Melbourne and a long-time double act with Des Ball. Welcome back, Richard.
Good to be with you, Philip. After 25 years, I'm delighted.
Well, you're sticking your head above the barricades again. Before a suitable piece of real estate was published over 30 years ago, most Australians knew very little about the US bases.
Absolutely. And Des Ball is the person who's told us most about them for the longest. But I think there was a sense that the Cold War finished and that people think, well, perhaps the bases have gone away. And as Des also has been saying for a long time, they've not. But they've also got bigger, we've got more of them, and I think now they're more complicated in both their relationship to the US as a whole and the kind of pickle that they're beginning to put Australia in.
I understand that even Pine Gap has twice as many antennas as it did at the end of the Cold War.
Well, it's extraordinary. I mean, if you look at it, it's a kind of upside-down T-shape, about a kilometre in each direction. Depending how you count them, there are probably now about 33 or 34 major antennas. There are lots of minor ones there. The antennas don't matter. They matter as much as, you know, the antenna on your top of your house. It's what goes on underneath it in the technology. And that just is also growing in sophistication. So Pine Gap is extraordinary in its expansion.
I take it that Northwest Cape, once an essential part of the US nuclear missile submarine command, has also been refigured for the 21st century.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's an old story and a new story about virtually all of these big bases. In Northwest Cape, yes, it was established as a very low-frequency communication base for communicating with Polaris submarines. They had to hang around in the top of the Indian Ocean if they were to reach their targets in the Soviet Union. As the technology got better, the missile ranges got longer, the Polaris submarines were replaced by others, which could hide much further away in the depths of the Pacific Ocean. So Northwest Cape lost that particular importance in nuclear missile technology. But it's come back again with another really quite new innovation, I suppose is one of the words for it, which is connection with Americans' plans for space warfare. And Northwest Cape is now getting a new, a very advanced space telescope and a fairly old but still very powerful space radar transferred from the old Cape Canaveral range. And that the job of that is simply to find adversary satellites, track them, monitor them, work out exactly what they're doing. Along the way, they'll also track the space junk, which might, a la the film Gravity, you know, run into our communication satellites and interrupt this very program.
So it's a part of the Star Wars
program. Well, that's right. It's come. It's in that generation or that line of descent. That's right.
Okay. Now the bases are ritualistically described as joint bases, but that's a furphy, isn't it?
Well, Stephen Smith, when he was Minister of Defence, used particularly to froth at the mouth. There are no US bases, he would say. I think my line is, if something is built by the United States, if it's principally paid for by the United States, and if it only works, particularly, if it only works as part of an American global military technological system, then it's an American base, which Australia may or may not have greater or lesser degrees of access to. And we've got a number of those.
Now, when Des Ball published that book in 1980, a lot of people were genuinely surprised about what you described because there was so much secrecy surrounding the bases. I guess they're just a secret now.
Well, they are in many respects. Certainly when people try to get into them, there's a great deal of legal trouble follows onto them. I think one of the things which is most puzzling still is that the very few number of people who actually work on these issues, given that, you know, academics really get paid quite well and there's a lot of research money around, you'd think that more people would be looking at these issues, but it's really a pretty small band of people. So they're secret, but particularly if you go looking in Washington, if you look at military publications there, if you look at what the military are required to say to Congress, you can find out a great deal. But if you knock on the door at Russell Hill in Canberra, then you'll get a very different reaction. So Australian defence military or defence cultures are much more secretive than the Americans.
Richard, what's been the main strategic rationale for us to stick with this arrangement, these bases?
The overt part has always been that really we need to go along to get along. We need the if we host the bases, the American it will guarantee that the Americans will get involved if push comes to shove. It also, it's said, will give us access. The Americans, because we're hosting the bases, will get access to higher level, say, avionics for the fighter planes we're paying billions for from the United States. It also sometimes is said, well, we get a secret seat at the table. In Washington. The only problem is that if we get a seat at the table, we're not very well known for our comments there. In fact, I asked Malcolm Fraser, could he remember any time in his ministerial, prime ministerial career or subsequently, a time when Australia had made its feelings known on a point where Washington did not want to hear it? And Malcolm couldn't think of one, and I'm not sure I can either, certainly not since the 1950s.
Since you and I last talked, there's been escalating discussion about drones. I believe one just got very close to the Oval Office, a little tiny baby drone. Are we involved in the drone war?
We're involved in two ways. Firstly, Pine Gap, which has two quite separate and distinct functions. Its principal one is so-called signals intelligence, satellites in space which are picking up radar signals, missile telemetry, but also cell phone signals, satellite phone signals. These have been used and supplied to United States intelligence organizations and then military organizations in terms of providing the metadata, what phones, what numbers, where are they moving, as well as the intercepts of what is said on them. And it's been made very clear by people who worked in Pine Gap that this is an important part of American counterterrorism operations.
Well, Richard, both drones, Richard, that means that we're involved in extrajudicial killings in countries which neither the US nor us are technically at war.
I think that's absolutely right. And sooner or later, the crucial piece of evidence is going to come out for lawyers who are working very actively on this in Britain, United States, Pakistan, and here in Australia, which will make this clear. It's been a good attempt in Britain about the companion station, Menwith Hill. It'll happen here. But there's also a second drone connection for Australia in the offing, and that's at Geraldton in Western Australia, which for many years has been one of our principal electronic spying stations, listening to all sorts of transmissions from satellites over the Indian Ocean and the Pacific. It now is a ground station for two very big American military communications systems. Australia gets a benefit from that in the sense that the ADF likes to be part of this and has paid a lot of money. But also one of those, the so-called wideband global system of satellites, is a crucial part of how drones communicate, how they send the sensor data, all that huge amount of information backwards and forwards. So we've got two connections to that now, and both of them, it seems to me, raise the question of our responsibility for, as you say, extrajudicial killings.
Well,
in countries where we're not at war.
There was a time when quite clearly the Soviet would have been, sort of doing some fine-tuning and targeting a few Australian addresses. The Chinese must be rather concerned about our deepening involvement with Washington.
Well, I think they're concerned about all three of the bases you mentioned. Pine Gap is still undoubtedly a high priority target. The Defence Department has pretty much admitted that. Geraldton, precisely because of this new role in communications, it's important. How important? You could argue about that, but certainly it would be on the Chinese minds. But Northwest Cape and its a space surveillance function, That's very much on the Chinese minds, I suspect.
Well, you go a bit further than that. This is a very powerful sentence of yours. From a Chinese perspective, Australia is not so much hosting US military bases, but is a virtual American base in its own right. The questions for Australians is whether the continued operation of the bases renders that outcome inevitable.
Well, I think that we really have to think about this. And this is one of the problems, I think, is you've talked about the secrecy. There's also a kind of silence about the basic issue of when do American interests and when do Australian interests align. Obviously, on some occasions they do, but clearly they don't on others. And the bases are kind of hardwiring us into one answer to that question, as is the kind of increasing tendency in the Australian Defence Force for so-called interoperability to be married to placing a lot of our people in American high-tech defence facilities. So we're wired in and we're organisationally wired into that. So I think that's one of the problems. And the Chinese, I think, are hoping Australia will think that one through, because it's really where we've made up, we are almost, it almost is inevitable at this point that we will be, you know, viewed fairly negatively if push comes to shove.
Richard, you also say it's important to think about the reaction of Japan as well as China. Why is that?
Well, Japan, as you know, is a country I lived in for a very long time and have a great deal of affection for, although I have rather less affection for its current government, the Abe administration, probably the most nationalist in Japan since 1945. And one of the roles that Pine Gap now has is to contribute to Japan and America's missile defence system in the Western Pacific. And technically, it basically comes down to, without the assistance currently given by Pine Gap, it's pretty much impossible for the American and Japanese radars on the missile defence ships and on land to have a chance, even a chance, of finding their targets. So as far as the Chinese are concerned, we're part of the missile defence system, which raises the possibility in Chinese eyes that in fact, it would be able to defeat China's own nuclear deterrent force if push comes to nuclear shove. And that's a pretty serious thing as far as the Chinese.
It's a rather chilling offhand sentence.
Yeah, there are a few of those around, aren't there? But one of the things which is most terrifying at the moment, and I find business people actually raise this with me more than anyone else, is the United States government people and Chinese government people are talking in fairly, you know, clearly that they can foresee a time when, I won't say it again, we could have major armed conflict. In other words, serious war between China and the United States. And this is a horrifying prospect,
Richard,
and a mad one.
Richard, is it likely? Is it remotely possible? Is there a snowball's chance in hell that any Labor or Conservative government would want to change the nature of the Australian-US Defence Alliance?
At the moment, no. I think Malcolm Fraser, yourself and I are very much on the outer on that one. On the other hand, I think that there are two factors that are going to change it, apart from any domestic opposition. The first is whether China chooses to really put Australia to the test on this, and they could. They haven't done so so far, but in the future they could. The second is whether Australian governments begin to realise that American foreign policy, American defence policy, is basically incoherent at the moment. After 3-4 years of Hillary Clinton and President Obama talking about the Pacific pivot, we now have the United States back in Iraq. We now have them operating in Syria. We still have them in Afghanistan. You can't get much more incoherent than that. And Australia is going along with that. If the strains of that, and remembering that the last two American wars in the Middle East have been fought on with plastic, paid for by plastic, if those costs begin to bear in on Australian governments, then there's a chance that there may be some distancing. I don't think we're talking about leaving the relationship. Malcolm Fraser talks about disentangling the alliance. I think, for example, on the question of drone killings, and this is something that makes many people very, very unhappy and very worried. If we are not able to say that Australian governments can't do anything about this, or if they can't do anything about that, then I think that will tip the balance on at least one of Pine Gap's functions.
Yeah, Richard, you've just blown your chance for a knighthood, but I thank you very much for coming on our first program of the year. Good to talk to you. And coming up next, that's Richard Tanter, Professor of International Relations at the University of Melbourne, amongst other things. Coming up next on the Little Wireless program, the pressure on the Muslim world to explain its position on Islamic radicalism after the attacks on Charlie Hebdo in Paris. LNL on RN, and it's either my 24th or my 25th year.